Talks between the government and Labour are set to continue over the Easter recess in hopes of finding a Brexit agreement that will be acceptable to all MPs. One of the biggest stumbling blocks, of course, has been the Irish backstop, the insurance policy in Theresa May's negotiations with the EU, that the Irish border remains open whatever the outcome of the UK and EU's future relationship. Let's talk to author Brendan O'Neill. Good morning to you, Brendan.
Hi there.
Brendan, you recently posted that as someone who comes from an Irish background, I hate the way Ireland is being used to try and scupper Brexit. What do you mean by that?
I think Brussels in particular, but also some Remainers, are exploiting Irish concerns to try to weaken Brexit itself and in the process to weaken British democracy. And this is not to say that there aren't any concerns. I think there will be practical problems in Ireland as a consequence of Brexit. But I do think the issue is being exaggerated and twisted and used as a means of weakening Brexit. And I think the Irish government, sadly, is going along with that.
You said, David, that there's a sentiment among some the Irish are warmongering people kept at peace by British arrangements. What do you mean by that, Brendan?
You know, the thing that I find really striking is that from Remainers in particular, especially in the media and also Remainer MPs, I hear a lot of things that sound to me like old-fashioned anti-Irish prejudice, because one of their key arguments is that if we make any changes at all on the island of Ireland, if we make any changes to the border in Ireland, then people will be propelled back into war, as if the Irish people are instinctively warmongering, as if they are this kind of violent race, and it's only down to British treaties or British arrangements or with the assistance of the European Union that they can be kept at peace. So I find that actually a very ugly argument. I think it's what's happening is that people who are anti-Brexit are using the spectre of Irish violence to try and blackmail Brexiteers into accepting a softer Brexit. I think that's an incredibly divisive and cynical approach, and it's almost an incitement to violence because it sets the tone for violence as an expected response to these developments. And I think it's just an incredibly questionable way to do politics.
Brendan, stay there if you can. Let's get the reaction of the Irish news journalist Alison Morris. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Your reaction to that?
I think there's a number of things. The one thing I would agree with Brendan on is that there are a lot of journalists who weren't aware of our situation here, who don't understand it, and who have been sort of peddling this, you know, the day after Brexit there will be violence on the streets of Northern Ireland line. And that's something that, you know, I think it's quite headline grabbing. And also it's something that shows a lack of understanding of the complexities of our situation. That's about the only thing I agree with them on. Everything else I disagree, because the problem is, since these negotiations have started, and if we go back to the referendum campaign in itself, what it did show was that Westminster and the British people have no concern for Ireland or Northern Ireland. It wasn't discussed in the referendum. The border wasn't discussed. The problems that Brexit was going to throw up in relation to the border, to the island of Ireland, to our economy, to the Good Friday Agreement. They were never taken under consideration. They were never on the side of a bus. They were never talked about. And then what we did have was obviously the arrangement that came with the DUP after that, where we have people who are Brexiteers who also voted against the Good Friday Agreement. And we must remember that we're trying to uphold the Good Friday Agreement, but the MPs with the most power in Westminster are MPs who voted against the Good Friday Agreement in the first place. And that all shows a lack of understanding of the complexities and also the sensitivities of our situation. So while no one's saying that a hard Brexit or a border in Ireland would start violence again the following day, 24 hours later, what it does do, and actually what we've already seen, is that there are people who are opposed to peace, who have always been opposed to peace. There are dissident Republicans who feel that armed conflict is the way to drive, you know, the British into the sea. And what they will do is they have been using Brexit to radicalise young people. And the thing that Brendan and those dissident Republicans would have in common is that in general dissident Republicanism was anti-EU anyway. They saw it as a, you know, an attack on Irish sovereignty. So they're not really concerned with Brexit or the economic complexities of Brexit, but what they do see is an opportunity. So if you have to put border checks at a border, well then that reinforces partition in the eyes of young people who were born after the Good Friday Agreement and who have never seen a border. And then you will know what the border looked like when we were younger. It was a militarised zone. It had militarised checkpoints. It had watchtowers. My children have never seen that border. It's completely seamless. So if you start them putting checks, no matter what those checks are, that will be exploited by people who want to use the border to radicalise another generation of young people. It reinforces partition in their minds, and it gives them an opportunity. It also, in many ways, a border great for criminals and smugglers. They love borders. There's nothing better. An open border is no use to a smuggler. A closed border is, and that would be used to raise money.
Let's let Brendan respond to that. There's quite a bit in there.
I think that's just a more sophisticated sounding argument of what Remainers in general have been saying, which is that if we go ahead with enacting the largest democratic vote in British history, there will be violence in Ireland. I actually think this is a repulsive argument. The use of the spectre of Irish violence as an attack on British democracy is the most divisive thing that is happening on these islands at the moment. The divisiveness is not actually coming from Brexit voters themselves who simply want to leave the European Union. It's coming from an establishment which is so repulsed by the idea of leaving the European Union and so determined to crush the democratic vote to leave the European Union that they will even use the spectre of Irish violence to try to weaken Brexit voters' resolve. That's an extraordinarily cynical and dangerous approach to politics. That's not how rational people ought to do politics. The thing is, partition in Ireland is a wrong in itself, in my view. My preference would be that there would be a united Ireland because I believe in national sovereignty and I believe that the Irish people voted many, 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 many years ago for an all-Ireland approach to their problems. That's a separate discussion, and that's a discussion we ought to have. But at the moment, the idea that Brexit will make the border worse or that Brexit will cause violence in Ireland, I think that is an incredibly low form of politics. And if anything is going to incite dissident groups in Ireland to say, now's our opportunity to dig up our guns, it is these Brussels bureaucrats and Remainers in the UK and pro-EU people in Ireland who are effectively inviting them to do so by saying this is an opportunity for you guys to come back.
Sorry, Brent, just in, what I think that again that shows a sort of lack of understanding. And I know that you
said
you have Irish heritage and Irish DNA, and that doesn't give you, you know, it doesn't mean you any less or more reason to be able to comment on this. But when you say dig up guns, that creates an impression of what you believe is that we have these sinister former provisional IRA members, you know, in their 60s, sitting around waiting on an excuse to start violence again. That's not what I'm talking about. We had a bomb went off in Derry at the start of this year, and the suspects who were arrested in connection with that were two people in their 20s and one person in their 30s. We're not talking about the old troubles of old. What we're talking about is a generation of young people who are economically depraved, who are living in a place where there has been a lack of investment after the end of the Troubles, places like Derry and Lurgan, which were completely and utterly neglected, who have no jobs. And just the way you see people who are being exploited by the far right in England because they live in areas of high deprivation, that happens here. And what will happen is young people who have little else to look forward to in terms of employment, which will get worse after Brexit if we are to believe all the assessments, are going to be right for the pricking for these people to be radicalised. So we're not talking about digging up guns. We're talking about very new, shiny guns, not old ones.
Can I just... I just want to say something there. You know, I'm not talking about my Irish DNA. My DNA doesn't matter. I'm talking about my Irish experience. My parents came to the United Kingdom from the west of Ireland in the 1970s, and they experienced anti-Irish racism. And the premise of the anti-Irish racism that they experienced was that Irish people were inherently violent, that Irish people were inherently untrustworthy, that Irish people were an unpredictable race, and you could easily provoke them into acts of drunken rage or acts of violent rage or acts of political rage. So I have had direct experience of precisely those arguments from the 1970s onwards. It then thankfully fizzled out in the 80s and the 90s, but I see those prejudices coming back. I see it from Remainers and even from pro-EU journalists and politicians in Dublin and Belfast. I see this argument that if Britain goes along this road, if Brussels doesn't stop us from enacting the largest democratic vote in British history, then the Irish will be violent and will cause all sorts of problems. That's a prejudicial argument.
Let's take some calls on this. 0-30-30-80-55-55. Brian in West Belfast. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Vinny.
Go ahead.
Listen to a load of nonsense there from the last speaker, but that's not what I'm...
His name's Brendan O'Neill, so if you've got a point to make directly to him, he is listening.
The point I want to make, but I just want to, when I was listening there, I live in Ireland. I live in Northern Ireland, you know, brought up. I'm a pensioner. I mean, but people have been violent all their years. That's a load of, nonsense. Anyway, what I want to say is, I agree with Alison. Alison made a comment early on about English don't understand Northern Ireland. They never will understand Northern Ireland. And when the English, if Brexit goes ahead, and we're in the Brexit for about, say, a few years, the English people will realise how much money that the Exchequer gives to Northern Ireland. And that's when they'll jump and say, hold on, where's all this money going? Let them fend for themselves. They have 5 years, they have 5 years to work it out and have another iron. And that's what will happen. When the economy starts running down, the English will wake up and say, I can't.
That money's been coming here for quite a while, Brian.
Yes, that's what I'm saying, Vinny. That's what I'm saying. They'll say it has to stop because they'll be in dire straits and they'll want to save money, put it that way. And that's what I think will happen. The English don't understand Ireland and Northern Ireland. They never did and never will.
Okay, Brian, thank you. Can I ask you, Brendan, just are you aware of what the current threat level for Northern Ireland related terrorism is here?
Well, I know that it's fairly high because of recent events that have taken place. This is one of the things that worries me. One of the things that worries me is that there has been, for a number of years, a low-level and occasionally a high-level threat from dissident groups who refuse to accept the current political structures. That makes the stirring up of that possibility by cynical Remainers even more dangerous. This is precisely what I'm talking about. I'm not saying that there aren't very small groups of individuals who would like to use violence in some form or other. What I'm talking about is the way in which when you have huge establishments, whether it's the Brussels establishment or the London establishment or the Dublin establishment, using that spectre to justify a political approach to Brexit, that's when you get the distinct possibility of antagonizing the situation. And I think that's incredibly cynical far more cynical than what Brexiteers are doing.
You mentioned your awareness of certain groups here. So what do you think their reaction would be in the event of a no-deal Brexit, which led to a harder border than we currently have?
Well, that's a really good question. And I think the answer to that question has been completely thrown into the air precisely by the anti-Brexit propaganda that we've seen over the past year or 2 years. The question of how they would respond to a hard border has almost been written for them by these anti-Brexit politicians and anti-Brexit journalists. That's what's so dangerous. What these people have done is written a script for dissident groups.
Okay, let me let Alison Morris back in there.
This is a reason why you can go back to...
Okay, Alison Morris.
Here for 20 years, I think I'm in a position to say what would happen if there was a hard border is they would love it. It would be manna from heaven from them because what they do, at this point in time is the support for dissident republicanism shrank dramatically. There was a lack of interest in it. People in Northern Ireland were very happy to live in a peaceful society where they can see that eventually we may have a border poll based on demographics or economics, and that is a much more peaceful and democratic way to run our system. But what has happened is that Brexit has given, in a lot of ways, has given them propaganda. It has given them a chance to say to young people, look how Britain treats us, look how they think of us. Okay. They're going to throw a big border back up the middle. And if you think about what that border is, that's not a border like if you're going on holiday and you're crossing from one country to the other. That border runs down the middle of some people's homes. That border is crossed 5, 6, 7 times a day by some people who live, in the vicinity of it.
Okay.
And if you start putting infrastructure there, all you do is radicalise a new generation of young people.
There is a chance, Brendan, that Alison, who has worked, as she mentioned herself, there for 20-odd years in journalism, a lot of that as a security correspondent, that she might have more of a grasp and awareness of this than you.
We often hear of the claims of expertise from pro-EU or pro-Remain writers and politicians, and that's starting to rub people up the wrong way, because ordinary voters are also well aware of the political situation and are not as stupid as people presume them to be. You know, by the same token, I've lived in London my whole life. And so as someone who is aware of what's happening in Britain, I know that the desire for Brexit is incredibly strong. This is the largest vote in the entire history of the United Kingdom, and people expect it to be acted upon. Okay. So we all have different forms of expertise. The only thing I would say is that Brexit presented an opportunity for the renewal of democracy in the United Kingdom. To use Ireland as an attempt to thwart that is going to cause the kind of divisions we haven't seen on these islands for a long time.
OK, let's go back to the phones. Jim Wilson, good morning to you.
Morning.
You've got a question for Alison.
No, Vinny, you know, I'm just listening to the conversation. A lot of things that Brenton says is right, but Alison has to realise too that, you know, the Good Friday Agreement, as far as I'm concerned, the only part of that that would be, I mean, would be the border. The British government said they won't put a border on the Northern Ireland or the Republic of Ireland, right? So, you know, Alison and those within Republicanism, Republican journalists and politicians in this country, to me, are stoking the flames of fire. They are stoking...
Okay, well, that's quite a specific accusation. You've made that point, and let's let Alison respond to that, and Jim, I'll bring you back in.
That's the point.
First of all, I'm not a Republican journalist. I work for a nationalist newspaper, Jim. That's a big assumption, a big jump you made there. But second of all, do you know the only...
I wasn't referring to just you, Alison.
The reason why you don't have Brexit right now, and the reason why we're not in the second phase of Brexit negotiations was because the DUP scuppered Brexit. They scuppered the withdrawal agreement. It wasn't the Irish government that scuppered it. It wasn't Brussels that scuppered it. It was the DUP because they refused to vote for Theresa May's deal. And that's why you have no Brexit now, not because of anything the Irish government did. But second of all, in relation to that, we know you've lived here. You've known and you've seen the effects that violence can have on young people. You've seen how easily that can be whipped up. I mean, if we just look back, go back to 2012 and go back to the flag protest, that came out of nowhere, and you had all those young people who were angry, who were easily radicalised and who were out on the streets protesting. Do you not think that you could have a similar situation?
And who whipped it up, Alison?
We had a border.
Mm. Who whipped it up, Alison? Politicians and journalists, just as I said, were the ones that whipped it up. And who's the ones that's whipping it up now about the border and about young Republicans and these things? It's journalists and politicians. Once again, not taking the responsibilities.
The people who are being arrested in relation to distant Republican crimes are getting younger and younger. It's not me making this up. It's fact. It is fact that young people are being recruited into these organisations, be they loyalist or Republican, and that those young people are being exploited, and that Brexit gives a greater opportunity for that. That's just a fact. That's not whipping things up. That's just stating fact.
OK, let's go to Michael next. Good morning, Michael. I think, is Michael there? No, Michael's dropped off. We'll try and get him back. Wayne in Warren Point. Good morning, Wayne.
Good morning, Vinny. Good morning, all. I'd just like to make a point. We have mainly the increase in distant Republic activity and loyalist activity is regarding the fact is we have no government. Prior to these events, we had no trouble for 20 years. And the reason why is...
I don't know if that's completely true, Wayne.
Of course, Vinny. When was the last time a bomb was planted? Since before we had 20 years of peace. When was the last murder? We had none. Now we have no government, there's no infrastructure. People have nothing.
That's simply just not true, Wayne. And I know you're going to ask me for dates and specifics, which I don't have. But
I can give you some specifics.
Well, Alison can. Go ahead. You're the expert here.
Yeah, you've had two prison officers killed. You've had David Black and Adrian Ismay. You've also had Ronan Kerr, who was killed. You had Stephen Carroll, who was killed. You had two soldiers who were killed outside Massarine. And we've also had numerous undercar bombs that have injured people, including Pater Heffron, who lost his legs in one. So that's not true. And that was all while we had a functioning government.
Wayne, the current threat level for Northern Ireland-related terrorism in Northern Ireland is severe. So that means that an attack is highly likely.
Very likely. But I think, Vinny, in my opinion, is if we don't have a government and people don't have anything to cling to, it's in complete chaos. And when you have nothing, people will go to any lens to get something. It is miserable in Northern Ireland this last 2.5 years.
Okay.
You hear it every day. It is heartbreaking. What do we have to do to get stability back in our own country? Do we have to go back to the bombs and the bullets because we can't get proper leaders in our own country.
Okay, Wayne, thank you. Danny is on the line next. Good morning, Danny.
Good morning.
You've got a not too bad. You've got a point you want to make to Brendan O'Neill.
Yes, I just couldn't believe what Brendan was saying. It doesn't seem to me that he understands Northern Ireland very much. Now, Northern Ireland voted to remain. We know the dangers of hardening of our border. We know that our peace is fragile, and we know we have to do everything we can to protect that. So, you know, that's what our situation is at the minute.
Brendan?
Well, the United Kingdom voted to leave. That's how a nation works. A sovereign nation votes, and then the vote is acted upon for all the people within that nation. And this was the largest vote in UK history. 17.4 million people voted to leave. I think we are underestimating the seriousness of preventing democracy from happening. And even worse than that, to try to prevent democracy from happening by using the spectre of violence, I think is an extraordinary state of affairs.
Brendan, you've just used the spectre of violence there as well. You said the prevention of democracy happening. Do you think people would get violent? Do you think
Where did I say that?
You just said that. What did you say? The danger of democracy.
The consequences.
What do you think would happen?
The consequences of democracy not happening is that people would lose faith in politics, would lose trust in the parliamentary system, and would probably stop voting in future elections. I happen to think they are very serious consequences, because a democracy is only healthy if people are engaged. And now we have a process where the largest act of engagement in the history of the United Kingdom is possibly not going to be acted upon because members of the establishment don't like it. And even worse, they are justifying their refusal to act on it by using the spectre of Irish violence. Every single part of this strikes me as quite immoral.
Alison, Michael is on the line next. Good morning to you, Michael.
You've got a
point you want to make to Alison.
Yeah, I'd just like to ask Alison a question. A week or so ago, back, district Republicans were able to intimidate and threaten and shut down a police recruitment day in Derry. So I would just like to ask Alison, should that recruitment day have gone ahead?
Of course it should have gone ahead if that was what people wanted. I don't understand what that's got to do with the record. What I will say is, I don't know if you live in that area, if you've seen it. That's my point. If you allow this to continue, what we're saying is young people who were born into peace, who should be enjoying a peaceful, democratic Northern Ireland is full of prosperous place for them to have education, to have employment, are now being dragged backwards and being dragged into extremist organisations. And what we're seeing, especially in Derry, and we've seen that last summer in Derry with the violence at the interface, was that young people were being exploited and being used by sinister, distant Republican forces, which is exactly what will happen if we have a Brexit that puts infrastructure at the border.
Alison's response to that question proves why that was a really important question, because if this police recruitment day was being attacked or threatened and so on, the implication of the kind of argument that Alison is putting is that it shouldn't have gone ahead because we would only...
No, ahead.
Hold on.
Okay,
let
I
me
think
finish,
Alison
let
said
me
the opposite of that.
Yes, I know. But the implication of the argument against Brexit, which is that if we do it, there will be violence, is precisely playing into the agenda of those who use violence. So that's the argument that's being made here. It would be like saying, well, we can't possibly have more pop concerts in the United Kingdom because they offend Islamist terrorists and they might blow them up. What you're doing when you make those kind of arguments is that you're actually doing the bidding of violent groups. And that's where the danger comes in.
Okay, just because we're pushed for time, Alison, you want to respond to that and then we'll try and squeeze in one more call before the end of the programme.
I think that what we have done is we have deviated off, because we do know, and we've had recent studies and surveys that have shown that there's a problem with recent confidence, and that's a whole different programme. It has got absolutely nothing to do with Brexit. But what you have seen in relation to that is that being exploited. And what you'll see at those protests is a growing number of very young people. And I think that should concern us all.
Okay, we'll try and squeeze in one more. Raymond and Clougher, as quick as you can, please, Raymond.
I'm just amazed at the distortion of figures that Brendan O'Neill is doing there. 52% of the people voted to leave. 48% voted to remain. That's a small majority, not a massive majority.
Okay,
small majority.
Let's let Brendan just respond to that, and then we have to finish. Brendan, last word to you.
It's the largest number of voters in British history if we don't do what they've asked us to do. That's the end of democracy as we know it.
Okay, Brendan O'Neill, thank you very much. Alison Morris, thank you.